Good morning and welcome to episode 35 of our monthly Q&A sessions with Sinton's employment team. Thank you again for all your positive comments about these sessions. As per normal, the employment team are going to answer three questions, and our speakers today are on your screen. We have Catherine Hope and Angela Carver. So without any further ado, I'm going to hand over to Angela for the first question.
Thanks, Pete, and good morning, everybody. The first question that I'm going to look at is whether or not you can dismiss somebody on the spot with less than 2 years. That should be service, not notice, I think. So the first thing to bear in mind is that everyone talks about the 2 year qualifying period for dismissals, but it's actually 2 years minus 1 week that you do need to be mindful of. So if you are about to dismiss an employee close to their 2 year work anniversary, just check the start date in the contract. That's the first thing you need to do. When you check the start date, then add 1 week, and that would be what would be classed as a statutory notice period. So you do your contractual start date, add a week. If that now takes you over the 2 year time limit, you could, as an employee, be vulnerable to claims. So the other thing to bear in mind is that there are a number of claims that can be made from the first day of employment. So you've got things like breach of contract claims, so if you don't pay somebody a contractual bonus. Also, discrimination claims under the Equality Act can be brought at any time, from even the advertisement of a job actually until after dismissal has taken place, which I'll come on to when I talk about references in a moment. And there's also dismissals for asserting a statutory right. Now, this covers a number of areas. For example, if you dismiss an employee because they've taken time off to look after a child, that's classed as time off for dependents. It's unpaid time, but if you then treat your employee differently or dismiss as a result of taking time off for dependents, that could be what we call an automatic unfair dismissal. So there is no qualifying period. You also need to look at things that are quite hot in the media at the moment for strike action. So if there's lawful strike action and your employee is taking part in that and you dismiss them as a result of it, again, automatic unfair dismissal, no 2 year qualifying period. And then the main one which comes through in, I would say, 7 out of 10 of every employment tribunal claim at the moment is about whistleblowing. So if an individual suffers a detriment or is dismissed, so we call it the primary reason for dismissal, is as a result of whistleblowing. Again, there's no qualifying period to bring a claim. So standard unfair dismissal, so you've got an employee who you think is just not quite the right fit for your business. There's no protected characteristics in play. There's no whistleblowing, no health and safety concerns raised, no breach of contract, for example. Then dismissing under the 2 year limit, when you take that week statutory notice in, should be okay, but I would always suggest you take advice before you make that decision. The other part that comes up quite a lot when people are looking to dismiss under the 2 years is whether or not the employee will take their holiday as part of their notice provision. The rule of thumb is, as an employer, you can ask your employee to take their holiday, but you need to give double the amount of notice to the period of holiday. So if they have 5 days holiday, you need to give 10 days notice. Again, be mindful that that doesn't tip you over the 2 year limit. And I'll pass you over to Catherine now for the second question.
Thanks, Angela. So the topic I'm going to look at now is the manual right to work checks and the statutory excuse. Now, I'm covering this because it has actually come up quite a few times recently with clients. And I know I'm referring there to manual right to work checks, but it's actually online as well. And it's important to know that certain ones will have to be done online now in terms of changes that came in earlier in the year. The starting point and how to look at this is all employers have a legal obligation to prevent illegal working. And you must therefore ensure that all your employees have the right to reside and work in the UK. And in doing that, you'll need to carry out right to work checks on all prospective employees before their employment starts. And you have to conduct follow-up checks where someone has a time-limited permission to live and work in the UK. You also have to keep records of checks carried out and not anyone, but employing anyone that you know or have reasonable cause to believe is an illegal worker. And there are certain civil and criminal sanctions for breaches of those obligations. Now, you'll all be aware of the statutory excuse, and that's where you can be excused from paying a civil penalty if you had followed and undertaken specified right to work checks as set out by the government. And I'm just going to touch upon them because we've had recent instances where employers have thought that they've been doing what they need to be able to then rely on that statutory excuse. But actually, when we've looked at what they've been doing in more detail, actually they haven't been doing things as they should, and therefore it means that if they wanted to, they couldn't rely on that. So it's just important to go over what you need to do. And it's employer's responsibility to be able to demonstrate your compliance. There's a three-step check that you need to carry out, and this is all set out on the government website. Please look at that and use it when you are employing staff, new staff, because that will change and you need to make sure you're using the current guidance and prescriptive steps. So it's a three-step check. Firstly, you need to obtain the employee's original documents if you're doing a manual check, and there are prescribed lists on the government website as to what will be acceptable, or you're checking the applicant's right to work online using a share code they provided. Now, if you're doing the manual document check, you will need to be satisfied that those documents relate to the individual in question and that they are original and unaltered. It's not that you'll be expected to be an expert in, you know, identifying false documentation, but there is guidance on the government website about, you know, things to look out for. So you need to actually be doing that in the employee's presence. In terms of online checks, use the share code and the employee's date of birth to access the employer section of the online right to work check. You then need to check, and it's really important that this needs to be in the presence of the individual in question, that they have the right to work in the UK. So performing that manual document check, looking at what they've provided, or in terms of online checks, using the information they've provided to check that that gives them the right to work in the UK. Then third step is copying. So in terms of manual documentation, copy the documents and record the date the check has taken place, and also document the dates of any follow-up checks when that's required, when someone has time limited permission. It's really important to note that those documents need to be saved in certain formats. So look at what those are in terms of, for example, a certain JPEG or PDF format. In terms of online checks, it's about saving the profile page in terms of when you've carried out the check and the date on which that's been conducted, and that needs to be retained again in a certain format. What I've come across lately is checks may well have been carried out and the individual may well have been there, but then when they've recorded, for example, on manual documentation, they've just, for example, said documents received on date. That doesn't give evidence that the check was actually carried out on that date. You need to document the check in terms of the three steps was carried out on that date when the individual was present. So it's just little things like that. And it's making sure that if you have managers who are responsible for carrying out these right to work checks, that they have training and they understand what they need to be doing and that it's documented correctly. Because that could be the difference between being able to rely on that statutory excuse or not. Also, timing is something that's come up recently. These checks have to be carried out before employment starts for you to be able to rely on that statutory excuse. I wouldn't advise waiting to the first day of employment. You want to do this before their first day, but if you had to, it could be done on the first day, but you'd need to make sure that was carried out before any work was carried out. So that had to be the first thing they do when they come in the morning, and you should be documenting the time of that so that there's no chance that they could start work by accident. It could be very easy they come in and actually they're pulled into something else, and that means they've started work and it hasn't happened before that's happened. So just be wary of those little details. All of this information can be found on the gov.uk website, so please do look at that. I'll pass you back to Angela for the next question.
Thanks, Catherine. So the final question that I need to look at is whether or not, as an employer, you need to give a reference. Rule of thumb is no, you don't have to give a reference. And that is unless you've contractually agreed to do so, or unless you're in certain industries which are regulated by the FCA or the FRA, so that's the Financial Conduct Authority and the Prudential Regulation Authority. There tends to be two types of reference that are given, that being a basic and a detailed. And what we tend to find actually is seldom do employers actually give detailed references anymore, which would usually go into the depths of giving detail about skills, ability and character. And the default position is dates of employment, role, and that the employer will accept no liability for the content of any reference. The other thing to bear in mind when you are giving a reference is that the provision of a reference will generally involve processing personal data by a controller. And as an employer, you are classed as the controller. Whenever I hear that word, I do always go to Tom's the Tank. I'm not sure if that's because I've got a four-year-old, but that's where I am. So you do need to be mindful that your reference will be subject to data protection principles. And if you're unsure on what the data protection principles are, please do take advice. In particular, if you are looking to give information about, for example, sickness absence, because this would fall within the category of special category data. Now, when giving a reference, and most employers do, you do owe a duty of care to your former employee, or worker, to take reasonable care to ensure the information that's in the reference is true, accurate, fair, and does not give a misleading impression of the employee. Now, you will often hear employees say, "Oh, I think my employer's given me a bad reference." Now, you can give a bad reference as long as it's fair and accurate. And, you know, as an employee, you can absolutely say that you don't think that individual is suitable for a job, provided it is fair, it is accurate, and it's not misleading. And there's nothing to stop you in a reference saying that, for example, an employee was dismissed. If you are in the middle of, for example, ongoing disciplinary proceedings when somebody resigns, I would suggest you take advice as to whether or not you input the content of that into your reference. There are various authorities relating to that, and you don't want to mislead a future employer when they're looking at the hiring of their staff. The final part that I would be mindful of is about whether or not any reference or the content of a reference is discriminatory. Now, there is a section in the Equality Act, it's section 108, which was actually added in to cover discrimination when an employment relationship is ended. And that provides that you shouldn't discriminate against an individual if the discrimination arises out of or is closely connected to the employment relationship that you once had. So you do need to be mindful about what you put in, whether or not you are giving or not giving a reference which details disability, or you're not giving a reference because of that, because you've got a prejudice or an unconscious bias, which again is a topic in itself. And you have to remember that an employee, if you give a reference which is discriminatory or is misleading, may have a claim against you as an employer. So that could be for discrimination in the employment tribunal against yourself for a discriminatory reference. It could be against the hirer who has withdrawn an offer because of a discriminatory reference, or it could be a claim in the county court for giving misleading or inaccurate information, which has resulted in the loss of a job. So in theory, yes, you can avoid giving a reference unless covered by the FCO or the PRA or contract, but you do need to be mindful that it needs to be fair, accurate, and it's not discriminatory. Okay, that's us done for the day. I'll pass you back over to Peter. Thank you.
Thanks, Angela. We continue to produce relevant content, blogs, videos and podcasts, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk. You can also follow the team on Twitter at @SintonsHR. The next session will be with you on Friday, the 26th of August at 10 a.m. again. And all that's left for me to say is thank you very much for listening and hope to see you next time.